Welcome to the Woodridge Baptist Church podcast. For more information about what's happening in the life of our church, visit our website at www.woodridge.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Well, happy Easter, Woodridge, and to all of the guests. We're glad that you're here and a part of what we're doing. This is one of the most special days of the year for the Christian faith. We always celebrate Christmas because we love the birth of Jesus and we love the sense of hope that Christmas brings. But when you think about Easter, Jesus was born to die. One of the parables that really captured my attention was the parable of the prodigal son. And I think it's a perfectly fitting parable for what we're celebrating today. But before we turn to that, in Luke chapter 15, I wanted to give you this story. This was some years ago, but there was a basketball player named Latrell Sprewell. And here's the reason that I bring him up. Latrell Sprewell was considered to be one of the better basketball players of his time. But Sprewell was forced into an early retirement in 2005 after turning down a $21 million contract extension with the Minnesota Timberwolves. The reason that he said that he turned down the contract was because, and I quote, "it wasn't enough money to feed my kids." I was sitting there going, man, what in the world are you feeding your kids, gold? Well, when he said that to the Timberwolves replied to him by offering him a contract extension of $0.00. Basically, that's a really nice way of saying you need to go packing. Now, of course, once he was packing, that gave him plenty of more time to go on to his partying. I mean, after all, he had a $1.5 million yacht that was called Milwaukee's Best, which, by the way, he had played for Milwaukee. Some even looked at the story and they said, well, hopefully Sprewell enjoyed a full year of living the life on what remained of his NBA earnings, because the yacht was eventually grounded and even repossessed by the federal marshals after he was unable to make the payments on the yacht. The yacht ended up selling at an auction for about $856,000, which led Sprewell with about almost $300,000 that he still owed on the balance. Now, that is not exactly the picture of financial responsibility. He even could have used the money for the yacht on his home, because about a year later, his home was foreclosed on. Now, that story is a rather telling story. Here you have a guy that has an opportunity for income that's unlike what most of us would ever get, $21 million extension, and he says that's just not enough. Now, for his standard of living, maybe it wasn't enough, but it does help us get our head around the idea of what's going on in the parable of the prodigal son. Now, before I read anything about the parable, I want to share you who Jesus was talking with. Jesus was talking with the Pharisees. He wasn't just talking with a crowd. Now, the Pharisees, they have their own laws, and they have their own idea of what it means to really follow God and what it means to be holy. You have to keep that in mind in order to understand the parable. And with that in mind, here's the way that it reads in Luke chapter 15, starting in verse 11. Jesus goes on to say, "There once was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to him, 'Father, give me my share of the property now.' So the man divided his property between his two sons. After a few days, the younger son sold his part of the property and left home with the money. He went to a country far away where he wasted his money in reckless living. He spent everything he had. Then a severe famine spread over the country, and he was left without a thing. So he went to work for one of the citizens of that country, who sent him out to his farm to take care of the pigs. He wished he could fill himself with the bean pods the pigs ate, but no one gave him anything to eat. And at last he came to his senses and he said, 'All my father's hired workers have more than they can eat, and here I am about to starve. I'll get up, I'll go to my father, and I'll say, Father, I've sinned against God and against you. I'm no longer fit to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired workers.' So he got up and he started back to his father. He was still a long way from home when his father saw him. His heart was filled with pity, and he ran. He threw his arms around his son and he kissed him. 'Father,' the son said, 'I have sinned against God and against you. I'm no longer fit to be called your son.' But the father called his servants. 'Hurry,' he said, 'bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and shoes on his feet. Then go and get the prized calf and kill it. Let us celebrate with a feast, for this son of mine was dead. Now he is alive. He was lost, but now he is found.' And so the feasting began." Now, we have a little bit more to go on the parable, but I want to stop and unpack a little bit of what's happening here. First, I want to think about the request that the son made to the father. Now, in the ancient Near East, this is the time that Jesus was actually living. The request that the son asks of the father basically is like saying, Father, I'm ready for you to die. I mean, you're not supposed to really be getting your inheritance until the father has died, but the son goes ahead and requests it, which is basically like looking at the father and say, you're dead to me, you're useless to me, but your cash is something that I really would value. Now, the father is expected to refuse the request, but he doesn't do it. And so we think about the gift. The father agrees to let the prodigal own and sell his portion of the estate, which, by the way, had to have been a lot of money. Here's the reason that we know that. If you look in the parable, they have a herd of fatted calves and goats. They have a banquet hall that is large enough for a crowd that can eat the fatted calf in one evening. They're also able to hire dancers and musicians for the party. The father, by the way, is respected in the community enough, so much so that the people are willing to come to the party simply at his invitation. It's not like they get the invitation and they go, oh, him, I don't think we'll spend the time there. We have something else to be doing. They saw him as worth being with. And when he sells the land, this is the thing. When the son sells the land, it then becomes public knowledge of what's going on. It's not just that the son has insulted the father. It's that what the son has requested from the father puts shame on the family in front of the entire community. So much so that there is a ceremony that we know that they practiced back in that day and that time. And we know this from the Jewish Talmud, which basically is sources from the rabbis on how it is that they should observe the law. And what we know from the Talmud is that we know that any Jewish boy who lost the family inheritance was punished if they returned to the village. So I want you to think about this son for a second. He goes to the father and he says, hey, give me some cash. And he does. Well, he gives him the land so that he then turns into cash and off he goes. Now, the son would be aware of this ceremony. The father is certainly aware of what this ceremony would look like. Let me tell you what would happen. The villagers would bring a large jar, they would fill it with burned nuts and corn. And if the son who had gone away was coming back, they would take the large jar out and meet him and break the jar in front of the guilty individual. And while they would do this, they would actually shout at the person before they were able to make it back into the community, you are cut off from this people. And after that, the people in the village would have absolutely nothing to do with him. That's a little bit of what's going on in this background. I think you can see what's happening in the village. But here's a question. What's really going on with the prodigal son, or what we refer to as the prodigal son? Well, first, the idea of prodigal. The word prodigal actually doesn't mean immoral. It just means that he was incredibly reckless. He was, so to speak, the ancient Near East version of Latrell Sprewell. Even if you look at the story, it doesn't tell us how he spent his money. We don't know. It just says that he was incredibly reckless with it. The only reason that we have this idea that he was spending it on women is something that happens later in the story. The older brother, at the end of the story, accuses the younger brother of hanging out and spending his money on prostitutes. But you have this question. I mean, how would he know? He was busy back home. Some have even suggested this about the older brother, is that the older brother, all he wants to do is to exaggerate his other brother's failures. Is that true? I don't know. But then think about the son. He gets this inheritance, he quickly turns it into cash, but then he spends it all. And as a result, he has to start searching for employment. When his money is spent, that's when he decides, I think I need to go back home. Here's the problem. The problem is that he's broken all of the rules of the community. He knows about the ceremony that's waiting for him if he returns to the village. So he is desperate to recover the money that he has lost. If he has the money, then maybe he won't face the shame. But if he doesn't have the money, then he has a very shameful ceremony that's waiting for him at the village doors. So he comes up with a couple of plans. Here's the first, and you already saw it. I'm going to go feed some pigs in a far country. Well, that seems to be okay, at least in the sense that it probably provided some food, but the text says no one gave him anything. Some have even said as a pig herder, he was probably fed, but he was probably never paid. He has to earn back the money that's wasted if he's going to avoid the ceremony. So working with the pigs wasn't going to get that done. And so instead, he has to come up with a plan B. You can kind of see him thinking in his head, how do I get this back? And that's when he comes up with the plan to talk to his father. And what he does is he rehearses this speech before coming home. So here's the idea. He wants to come home, and the plan is go home, I'm going to get some job training, I'm going to earn my way back in. But to get job training, I'm going to need my father's endorsement. And so I have to convince my father to trust me again because of the relationship that I've broken with him. If you look back in the parable, that's really interesting. There are a couple of phrases that are used that speak to the heart condition of the prodigal son. You know, on the one hand, it says that after going and working with the pigs, he came to himself. And some of us think, wow, that's good. He finally had this realization that the life that he's been pursuing is wrong. But that really isn't probably what it means. It doesn't mean that he repented. Some understand it to mean something like this. He took an interest in himself, or he was just thinking to himself. Here's another way of understanding it. I have an idea. Some look at this other phrase. You know, he says, I've sinned against God, or I've sinned against heaven, and I've sinned against you. Remember, he's practicing this speech for his father. The problem is that we've seen this kind of confession before. If you go back into Exodus chapter 10, verse 16, you might remember the Pharaoh. Pretty difficult time. You have all these plagues that are happening. God is basically bringing judgment down on the Egyptians for having held his people in slavery for over 400 years. And Moses has these encounters with the Pharaoh. You get around the eighth plague, the eighth, right? And the Pharaoh tries to manipulate Moses by saying the exact same thing that you just saw the prodigal rehearsing with what he was going to say to his father. I've sinned against God, and I've sinned against you. The catch with the Pharaoh is, we know that his heart hadn't changed at all. He just wanted the plagues to stop. He just didn't want to suffer anymore. He didn't want his people to suffer anymore. But his heart was absolutely the same. So what the Pharaoh says to Moses is, I've sinned against God and against you. Make it stop. But we also know of the Pharaoh that since his heart didn't change, we know his heart didn't change because there were still two more plagues yet to come. You have the ninth and the tenth plague. So some look at the prodigal and they say, the prodigal takes a cue from somebody like the Pharaoh. I'm just going to say something so that I can soften my father's heart, so that I can get my father's endorsement, so that I can then get a job, get training that is needed, and maybe one day I'll be restored back to my community. But notice the prodigal. If I restore the money, everything is going to be solved. Here's what he never does. He never considers the pain that he's caused the father. He never considers the pain, at least at this point, that he's caused his family. And he never considers the shame that he's brought on any of them in the community. He never considers the rejected love that the father has endured while he's been off doing whatever it is that he was doing. And even in his prayer, it doesn't seem that there is shame or remorse. Instead, what we see from the prodigal is that he has regret at where he's at in life. So let's think about the return. He has this great plan. He has a speech that's rehearsed. The other jobs haven't worked out. So the prodigal sets his eyes on going back home. He's even ready to endure a very public and shameful ceremony. The prodigal is expected to return with gifts because of the damage that he's done to the family. But he returns with nothing to offer the family. But then we see the father. From the time that the son sells the land and goes away, the father knows that the son is going to fail. And we know this because you see in the story that the father goes to the land and it says he looks from a far distance and he's constantly looking for the return of the son. The father also knows how the son is going to be received by the community when he comes back. And so the father's plan is this. I'm going to get to my son before my son makes it to the village. After all, if the father can piece together the relationship with the prodigal son, then no one in the village is going to treat him poorly. And when he sees his son coming from a distance, I love the way the story Jesus tells says it. It says the father reaches down and he grabs the bottom of his robe and he runs to his son. That is so interesting. Because back in that day and time, you never ran when you were wearing a robe. To do so was absolutely humiliating to you. But the father runs to his son. And before the son can even get his speech really out, or even a word, the father is hugging him and he's kissing him. The father does nothing in response to the son's speech. The son hasn't even started to talk yet. It's simply out of compassion for his son. And the son is completely surprised. And he can only begin with his speech. You know, he says, I've sinned against God. I'm unworthy. But at this moment, you can finally see the actual change in the son. The son realizes he has no great ideas to put the relationship back together. And at this, the prodigal has changed his mind. He's no longer working his father to see what he can get out of him. He just wants his father. He stops seeing his father as useful. And he saw the relationship with the father as beautiful. So you can see with this how the father in the story is a symbol of Jesus. He comes to us to make the relationship happen. Now, this all sounds really good. Even with the banquet, there's this huge party. Everybody is coming. The banquet is a party of the reconciliation of the father and the prodigal, a very different experience than the one the prodigal had in mind that he thought he was going to get from the community when he started his journey back. He was expecting broken pots and cast out. The village is actually celebrating him. It even says he received him, just like Jesus receives sinners, and he eats with them. The banquet is not so much about the prodigal reaching home as it is about celebrating the father's efforts at creating peace where there once wasn't any. But then we see this other character in the story. It's the older brother. You know how older brothers are. All right, I say that because I'm the youngest of three sons. Picking up in verse 25, let me read about him. It says, in the meantime, the elder son, he was out in the field. On his way back, when he came close to the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and he asked him, what's going on? Well, your brother has come back home, the servant answered, and your father has killed the prized calf because he got him back safe and sound. Sounds like something worth celebrating, right? And the elder brother got so angry that he wouldn't go into the house. So the father came out, he begged him to come in, but he answered his father, look, all these years I've worked for you like a slave and I've never disobeyed your orders. What have you given me? Not even a goat for me to have a feast with my friends. But this son of yours wastes all your property on prostitutes. Again, how do you know that? But he wastes all your money on your prostitutes. And when he comes back home, you kill the prize calf for him? My son, the father answered, you are always here with me, and everything that I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be happy because your brother was dead, but now he's alive. He was lost. He's been found. It's like saying, what are you so upset about? I mean, what did you want for your brother? Did you want him ruined? But let's think about the older son's anger for a second. The older son is so angry that he breaks his relationship with his father. This happens during a celebration, a ceremony. And for a son to be present and to refuse to participate was an enormous insult to the father. Have we seen that before in this story? Earlier, you have a son that's like, hey, I wish you were dead. Can I just get the cash and go on my way because you're not what I want? And now you just have an angry son who says, basically, I don't want to have anything to do with you because of his anger. But for the second time in the same day, the father is willing to offer a costly demonstration of an unexpected love. This time, by the way, to the law keeper. Remember who Jesus was talking to? Jesus was talking to the Pharisees. These are the people that are the law keepers, at least in their own eyes. So he gives this story of the second son because he wants to talk about an unexpected love to the law keeper rather than the law breaker, which is the younger son. Here's basically what Jesus is saying to them. You have your laws. You have your own sense of goodness. You just don't have me. And the older son's response stands in a stark contrast from what we saw to the younger son. The younger son, when he finally has that wake-up moment, he accepted the grace and the kindness of the father. The older son was unimpressed. This Easter, we have a choice that we have to make. And we can respond to the grace of God in one of two ways. We can respond like the younger son, or we can respond like the older son. It doesn't make the grace of God any less extravagant. It doesn't make the grace of God any less open to you. The question is do we want to participate in what God is trying to offer us? I always think on Holy Week, there's so many emotions that come over me. You know, as the week progresses, I think of the suffering of Jesus. And every year it overwhelms me. But I always have this eye to Sunday because it's such a day of celebration. This is the beauty of Easter, is that we have the opportunity, frankly, to celebrate it every day. Because in spite of the fact that I came to Jesus when I was 11 years old, honestly, I have to keep coming back to Jesus because I'm not fully there yet. I'm just not fully there yet. And here's what I know. The response that I see in this story is that Jesus' approach to me is no different when I first came to him in 1986 than when I come to him today. He is like the father in this story that is celebrating the fact that I've returned. He is celebrating with grace and with hugs and with forgiveness. And that is what I want for you this Easter, is to come home. It all begins with a simple admission that you're a sinner and that you need the grace that is shown in a story like this. All have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. And then what you do is you take these steps, much like what I've taken over the years, I hope, where I look more and more like Jesus. I love the world less and I love him more. And it all begins with a prayer. And so for wherever you're at, I invite you to pray this with me. That you reach out to Christ, that you're honest about who you are, knowing that his grace is sufficient to cover a multitude of sins. And so right now, right where you're at, I invite you to pray this with me. Lord Jesus, I know that I am a sinner. I know that I am in need of grace and forgiveness. And I thank you that that's what you're offering me today. I confess my sin before you, and I'm asking you, Lord, to forgive me. I'm asking you, Lord, to change my heart. I'm asking you, Lord, to help me to love the things that you love and to turn from the things that caused the problem and the break in my relationship with you to begin with. I thank you, Lord, for the promise of your forgiveness, for the promise of hope that is found in it. Help me as I walk in this new faith from this day forward. And I pray this all in Jesus' name. Amen. Friends, we're gonna end our service with a time of celebration, because what is true of those of you that just prayed is true of those of us who prayed many years ago. His mercy is more. I hope that you think about this this week as you celebrate Easter with your families, and I hope that you have an incredible day. God bless you, and I hope to see you soon.
We hope you have enjoyed the podcast. For more information about our church, visit www.woodridge.org.